When I started looking for Democratic Socialists in Texas, I couldn't find many at all there. I think there are three on city council in San Antonio. The Travis County DA, Jose Garza, there's you. Why aren't there any more in Texas?
Well, you know, I think there will be more in the days to come. Obviously, there is a lot of, you know, old anti-communist rhetoric, right, that goes back to the Cold War era. And sometimes it's a little hard to break through, especially if you're in a more rural community or, you know, not one of these urban centers like Austin. But I think bit by bit, as we win concrete gains that improve people's lives, that's when you're going to see this become more popular.
Hey guys, welcome back. Brand new episode of Y'allitooks here. We're looking at something that we've talked about for a while. You know, on the right, we talk about the far right, how the MAGA group has really kind of overtaken, not really kind of overtaken, it has overtaken the Republican Party.
Nationally and here in Texas.
100%. So that is the Republican Party today. We have looked less, because Democrats aren't as big in Texas, but we have looked less at what the far left looks like.
Right.
And we know nationally what the far left looks like. Democratic Socialists.
Right.
Bernie Sanders, AOC, Mayor Mamdani from New York.
New York City.
Did you know there are a handful of Democratic Socialists already serving in office in Texas?
Yeah, it's not, I think, something that people identify Texas with,
no.
But it's here as well. And you know, I pulled up, and this is going to trigger you. I already know this.
People are always trying to gaslight me today.
No.
I don't know why.
No.
Our producer, Daryl's trying to gaslight me as soon as I walked out of the studio.
We have been together long enough that I know that this is going to get you.
Let me have a swig.
Yeah, what do you have in there anyway?
This is a Hill Country Bock.
Okay. I am doing an amber
from
Allstadt Brewery.
Is it Blanco or Blanco?
Blanco. We say Blanco. It's supposed to be, you know, technically it should be Blanco, but it's Blanco here in Texas.
All right. Now go ahead.
All right. So here's your trigger. So I pulled up a Reuters article about this, and I just want you to notice how many tabs I have open right now. I think it's like 62 tabs.
You can't even see the little X's on where you can like X add up. All you see is the logo.
So this gets him every time. Every time he sees my computer, he goes crazy because
he's missing keys on his computer.
That I can't do anything about. I've spoken to IT. But the funny thing is that this is how I work, and I don't know what this says about someone's mind. But
we know where
I'll go 60, 70. I mean, they're falling off. Like, I can't even see all the icons at some point, you know? Anyway,
there's gotta be medication for that. Maybe a pharmaceutical could help.
I probably need 2 pills a day. So I think tab 61 here is where the Reuters article falls. And this is an interesting thing to me. They did a poll, and they found, and this was just put out in July of this year.
Oh, wow.
They did a poll of Americans and said only 49% say that they fully understand Democratic socialist policies. And so I think that the far left has, you know, a lot of explaining to do to just tell people, you know, here's what we even are about, and here's, you know, our vision for this country or for this state.
Right.
And yet 27% said that Democratic socialists have at least some good ideas. And so it's gotten traction with a percentage of the electorate, but still the majority of people in America don't fully know what DSA is and what
right.
they stand for.
You know, we talk about socialism, and I immediately thought, when we started seeing the headlines over the last year, that President Trump is investing taxpayer dollars into these different tech firms.
Yeah, yeah.
I can understand the
argument. A lot of people have made that argument.
But that is socialism.
Yeah.
The government owning the factories here, the companies. Now, I understand.
Shares in companies. Yeah,
shares in companies. And then that's what they're doing. That's what the president's doing here. But I can understand both sides of that. On the left, though, you're exactly right. How does being a Democrat differ from being a Democratic Socialist?
Right.
And one of the Democratic Socialists that we're going to talk to on this episode here explains that. And he one of the things I ask him is, like, you know, what have you done in elected office in Texas that you would consider Democratic Socialism?
Hmm.
And he talked about a number of things you'll hear in a moment. And one of the things is mass surveillance, flock cameras.
Hmm.
I'm like, I wouldn't really think that's a Democratic Socialist ideal, but maybe it is. It seems like they're adopting some things that are maybe not worker specific or social specific, adopting other things that maybe trying to put them under that umbrella.
Hmm. So now we're going to get educated on...
We are.
At least what his view of a Democratic Socialist is and actually what he has done that kind of shows this is the kind of work I'm talking about.
But you're getting ahead of me here. So you have 62 tabs open?
About, I think it's 62.
I have
one piece of paper.
One piece of paper.
Wow, we're going back to 1980 now. Paper.
Old school. You know what? Growing up in the 80s, and you may remember this, you don't remember this article, but Forbes magazine, I may still have it somewhere in a box. Forbes magazine had an article, had a cover story, and the magazine back in the 80s talking about by the year 2000 we'll be a paperless society.
That's a good one.
And I remember in the 80s thinking, what are we going to write on?
Do you know the stacks of paper around my house and how much we have to recycle at my desk as well? Yeah. I wish we were a paperless society.
But getting back to this, you know, I pulled a few polls too, because I've heard some of these polls lately talking about how, you know, a number of young Americans are either neutral or positive towards democratic socialism and socialist ideals. And, you know, as people who grew up in, you know, the Cold War era were like, that was... Communism, socialism was terrible.
Yeah, socialism still has that connotation.
Socialism still does have that connotation. Nationally, people still don't like the concept of socialism in this capitalist country. But a number of Democrats also say, Gallup did a survey, 66% of Democrats have a favorable view towards socialism. CNN, roughly one-third to two-fifths of Democrats self-identify as a democratic socialist. So there are... five Democratic socialists already in elected office in Texas. Three sit on the San Antonio City Council, where you used to work and live down in San Antonio.
Right.
We're not supposed to call it San Antonio.
I never have called it San Antonio.
That was for you.
I just don't understand
for
that.
For the 210. but there are two others who are Democratic socialists who are working in Austin. You also worked there.
Did I as well. Yeah, I can't seem to hold a steady job, so I just keep moving.
This is the longest. Actually, this podcast may be one of the longest jobs he's ever had. And that's just because I feel benevolent and generous towards him. I keep him around.
Well, thank you for that. I did need it.
But the district attorney in Travis County in Austin, Jose Garza, I didn't realize this. Mm-hmm. I thought he's a Democrat. Didn't know he's a Democratic Socialist. There's also...
It's both, then.
It's both.
Yeah.
There's also a city council member named Mike Siegel. He is a Democratic Socialist, and I reached out to him. I called one of my friends in Austin and said, do you know this guy? And she said, yeah, he's a great guy. Give him a call. He'll explain to you what this is all about. He'll lay it out for you. So we called him. We reached him at City Hall, and we had tons of questions for him. How do you become a Democratic Socialist? What is it all about? And you're going to hear in here some things that you might wonder, is that really Democratic Socialism? They're claiming it is, and we'll see how the movement goes from here. Here's Mike Siegel from Austin City Hall. Councilmember, I appreciate you being here. Thanks for the time.
Thanks for having me.
You choose the label Democratic Socialist. Tell us what that means in plain English.
Well, I'll just start with my background. I've been a public school teacher, a civil rights lawyer. I'm now an elected public servant. And, you know, I care about people, and I want to care for people. And for me, democratic socialism is really about loving your neighbor, right? Answering the question, will you fight for someone you don't know? Will you make sure your neighbor has housing, has money in their pocket, can see a doctor when they need to? Do they have food in the fridge? Making sure everyone has the basics in life to succeed and thrive.
And when we're talking about the basics here, tell us exactly what that means, what that looks like in practice for you there on City Council.
Well, in City Council, you know, I'm one vote out of 11, right? And when I take an action, I want to basically make sure that I'm lifting up as many people as possible, right? So we just got through a budget process, and there was a proposal by our city manager to cut contracts for social service programs. And that was my top priority, to reverse that cut, to make sure that we're providing health care and mental health support and housing support for as many people as possible.
It sounds like, just based on what you're laying out there, that, you know, members of any party would say, yeah, I fight for those things too, but how are you different?
Well, you know, in some ways, you know, the Democratic Party of Franklin Delano Roosevelt is very similar to what we talk about now with democratic socialism, right? The idea that our president set in place Social Security, that later we added Medicare and Medicaid, that we have the, you know, the Fair Housing Act, that we have these programs to provide for people's basic needs. And I think the difference is, frankly, emphasis, right? You know, where do you prioritize everyone having the basics to succeed in life versus other things? And I think some folks might prioritize helping business more. And maybe when you help a business, that might be extracting more wealth from working people. And that's where the difference could occur. You know, do you favor free economic development, whether that hurts working people or not, or do you want to make sure working people are taken care of first?
And when you talk about socialism here, tell us what you're talking about. Are we talking about more labor unions, you know, public housing, ownership of you know, private companies? What's the overall idea here? You mentioned that loving your neighbor and helping your neighbor, but kind of zoom out for us and give us an idea of the bigger picture here.
I mean, one of the demands that got a lot of people into the Democratic Socialists of America was Bernie Sanders advocating for Medicare for all, right? The idea that every person in this country would qualify for a healthcare program where you could see a doctor regardless of how much money you have in the bank, right? That you could get healthcare when you need it, that healthcare would be a universal public good that all of us have access to. So that would be a Democratic Socialist program.
Councilman, what do you say to the voter who hears the word democratic socialist or socialist and immediately thinks of Cuba or Venezuela or other, you know, failed governments that just do not work? What do you say to those voters?
Well, first of all, yeah, there's not a lot of familiarity with this terminology. In this country, we demonized words like socialism, and there's been a lot of fear to use these words. And so I start with talking about the practical impact, right? Should we tax the billionaires to make sure we can pay for basic social services for everyone? Should we have, you know, anti-corruption reforms to make sure that the wealthiest companies can't exploit workers and, you know, steal their paychecks and deny them healthcare and things of that nature? And so I think talking about it from a practical point of view is much healthier for people. But in terms of Democratic Socialists of America, a lot of us are members of the Democratic Party. And we're just trying to advocate for a Democratic Party that favors working people and the needs of working people over the needs of corporations.
And that's what I was going to ask you next here is, what's the big difference, do you think, between someone who identifies as a member of the Democratic Party and then a Democratic Socialist?
There's a lot of alignment. I saw a poll recently that said that 58% of Democrats identify as Democratic Socialists. And in some ways, within our party, there's a little bit of a division between two tendencies. One that's, you know, maybe seeking campaign contributions from the wealthiest companies in the country, and the other that's trying to advocate for the needs of working people. And those two tendencies don't always align within the Democratic Party. So I would say it's a tendency within the Democratic Party that's really focused on having a more equitable distribution of wealth, to having more fair economic policies, more robust social safety net, so we can take care of each other.
And what do you say to those Democrats who believe the word socialism is just too toxic to win statewide elections here in Texas?
You know, when you talk about the goods of socialism, those are extremely popular. You know, if you ask someone, should everybody have health care? Should everyone be able to attend a high quality public school? You know, should everybody have the ability to access housing, right? Should we have parks? Should we have pools? Should we have after school programs and childcare? Once you lay out that's what we mean by democratic socialism, I think these are very popular ideas.
And tell me how you got involved. Tell me how you began as a democratic socialist. Did you start as a member of the Democratic Party and then kind of switch over, or what happened?
I'm a Democrat and a Democratic Socialist. The two are not in contradiction. You know, I was raised by a family that my parents, you know, protested the Vietnam War, were part of social movements in the 1960s. So these were values that I was raised with, you know, that we are trending as a country to a more just country, a more equitable country. So that's almost my family upbringing. But to me, these are things that are very popular and very needed, because right now what's happening in America is there's a greater concentration of wealth. Right in my backyard is the first trillionaire that's ever existed in human history. And there's no way to be a just trillionaire. The only way you get there is by extracting wealth from other working people, by polluting the environment, by frankly ripping off the government. That's the only way you can concentrate so much wealth in one person's hands. And so I think there's a greater resentment that so much money is concentrated in the hands of so few. And this is a part of the movement to counteract that.
And can you tell us one thing you've actually accomplished in Austin that you would describe as a democratic socialist ideal there on the council?
I can talk about several. I think paying our city workers more so they can afford to live in the city is a democratic socialist program. Using public dollars to fund affordable housing so that it's not just these wealthy people that can live in downtown high rises, that working class people can live in the community. That's a democratic socialist program. Frankly, fighting for privacy is a big concern right now. We've had these, you know, license plate readers and surveillance programs and flock safety. And in Austin, I led the effort to discontinue those programs and to end our contract with Flock to prevent surveillance, invasion of our privacy for corporate profits. That is also a democratic socialist program.
How about the, I was reading about the green social housing that, you were pushing for also. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and kind of where that stands? I didn't get the finality on that, whether there is, has any, you know, action been taken by council?
So green social housing is a policy under development, and the idea is that the public sector can build the housing the private sector won't. Right now in Austin, people are stopping building apartment houses and, you know, middle income housing because they say there's too much supply. And that means that if you just let the market forces do their thing, they're going to wait until rents become higher and housing becomes too expensive before they start building again. And that's where the public sector could come in, make sure we continue to build housing that's deeply affordable so everyone can live in our community.
And of course, you know, another idea that a lot of cities do is give developers tax incentives. If you have a quarter of your development that's maybe affordable housing, has that not worked in your opinion?
So programs like that do produce some amount of affordable housing, but it's just not enough. You know, if you're relying on a private sector person who needs their 20% developer profit, they're only going to be able to do so much for affordability. And it's frankly, it's the federal government that built, you know, public housing in this country and that built, you know, millions of units of housing across the country for poor and working class people. And we need that type of investment again. There's a national housing crisis and the federal government hasn't invested in that area in decades. And we need to return to that kind of program.
And I've read that you've been in office since 2025. Has being a democratic socialist made it any easier or more difficult to build coalitions and get things done on council?
Well, when I work with my peers on council, I don't say, hey, I'm a democratic socialist. Do you want to work on this housing policy? Do you want to work on this environmental policy? You know, that's just not the conversation. There's people outside of City Hall that see me that way and support me maybe for those reasons. But really, it's very pragmatic on a case-by-case basis, you know, how we vote as a collective on city council. And so it's not really a big part of the conversation.
When you're knocking on doors there in District 7, though, how many voters actually say they support democratic socialism, or are they talking about the ideas and ideals that you espouse?
You know, at the door, you have 30 seconds, if that, to convince someone to support you. And I lead with something that will impact their lives directly. And so we don't start from the theory. You know, we say, would you like to build more affordable housing? Would you like to invest in our parks so you can walk to a swimming pool when it's 100 degrees during the summer? I think with, for the vast majority of people, they don't think about political theory. They think about how government can improve their lives.
We've all seen that nationally democratic socialism is having a moment right now. But can those ideas work in Texas, do you think, on a broader scale here? You know, independents decide every election. Independents generally lean to the right in this state. But what would you say to the skeptics out there in Texas?
I think an issue like data centers gives a real good example for why democratic socialism is a good theory. Right? Why are we building all of these data centers? Who benefits? The answer is it's not working class people. It's not, you know, your neighbor. It's a very small number of billionaires that want to develop artificial intelligence and replace workers. And they're using up our water. They're jacking up our electric rates. They're taking up a bunch of land. And that's not to benefit people. This is an example of, you know, the top versus the bottom. The vast majority of us, 90% of us in Texas, are not rich, right? Maybe 95% of us. And it's this very few that are extracting all of this land, all these resources for data centers. And that's an example of why we need a politics that focuses on working people and that unites working class people so that we can get a fair shot in life.
Councilman, I see the popularity of Representative James Tallarico right now. He's doing very well in the polls in his U.S. Senate race. But when I started looking for more democratic socialist, I know he doesn't identify as one, when I started looking for democratic socialists in Texas, I couldn't find many at all there. I think there are three on city council in San Antonio, the Travis County DA, Jose Garza, there's you. Why aren't there any more in Texas?
Well, you know, I think there will be more in the days to come. Obviously, there is a lot of, you know, old anti-communist rhetoric, right, that goes back to the Cold War era. And sometimes it's a little hard to break through, especially if you're in a more rural community or, you know, not one of these urban centers like Austin. But I think bit by bit, as we win concrete gains that improve people's lives, that's when you're going to see this become more popular. And so obviously, yeah, the New York New York City has a mayor who, as the chief executive, can just do good things and he can prove the theory in action. But it's going to take time for folks like myself, the folks in San Antonio and elsewhere, to prove the benefits of this theory.
And I was going to ask about Mayor Mamdani in New York. What policy has he implemented or discussed that you'd most like Austin to try?
What I love is how quickly he's doing things and proving that the government can make your life better. Right? They had a major snowstorm and they didn't know how they're going to pick up all the snow up. And so he hires people at $30 or $35 an hour just to shovel snow. And they get all the snow out of Manhattan. Right? He's got this campaign to fill thousands and thousands of potholes. You know, you can just tweet about a pothole and he'll fix it the next day. I think it's that nuts and bolts, you know, type of work that really makes a difference and wins people over. You know, there's a term from Milwaukee called sewer socialism, right? That the way to the hearts of people is to make their sewer function better, to make their roads function better, like to do the basics first.
Yeah, I have not heard that one. I'm going to look into that one, though. A couple of the things that Mayor Mamdani has talked about is potentially city-owned bodegas, you know, markets and the stores in New York. Talked about free public transportation. Are those ideas, do you think, transferable to Texas, transferable to Austin?
One of the challenges we have in Texas is the state government has really starved the cities for resources. Yeah. So we have very few mechanisms to increase income to pay for things like free busing, you know, freezing the rent, some of the high profile demands that Mayor Mamdani has made. And so we would need to change some of the financial structures. Really, we need a DSA for the Texas legislature to change some of the policies that are coming out of the state house before cities would have more power to do what they're doing in New York City.
And just to sum things up here, you mentioned a couple of times here that just the word socialism has this terrible connotation. You know, we were all raised thinking communism, socialism's terrible. The government shouldn't own things. You know, let free market work as it is. What would you say to people, though, who do not understand this and do not understand how voters out there would elect somebody who's socialist?
You know, they called Social Security socialism when it was introduced in this country. But now it's just universally accepted that all of us should be able to retire with dignity, right? They called Medicare and Medicaid socialism when those programs were brought forward in the 1960s. And now all of us think that everyone should have access to good quality health care. You know, public education might, for some, might be considered socialism. The idea that for no money at all, we should be able to go to the neighborhood school and get an education and have opportunity in society. And so that's what we're fighting for, you know, basic human rights, basic human goods, so all of us can thrive, so we don't have to worry about our neighbor being out on the street, not having enough money for food. That if all of us are taken care of, if all of us are taken care of in terms of our basic needs, then all of us are safer, all of us are happier, and all of us have opportunity to thrive.
And it sounds like this may be more of a branding problem than an idea problem here. Is that the case, do you think?
I think we need to recognize that for some folks who might have the power in this moment of history, who have the control and authority and money, that these ideas are hostile, that someone like Elon Musk doesn't want to be taxed to pay for a social safety net, that the folks who are billionaires want to stay billionaires and they want their grandchildren to be billionaires. But that is in direct contradiction to democracy, right? They are distorting our political system to preserve their own wealth. And that's something we need to do something about that. And you know, starting locally and organizing about these ideas of what, you know, democracy should look like, that's maybe the first step.
And then last thing, you mentioned that you were a public school teacher for a while, an attorney, now you're on city council there. Do you have higher political aspirations?
You know, I really love this job. This is the best job I've ever had. I get paid a good salary here in Austin. I have five wonderful people who work with me to do the work of the city. And if I'm lucky enough to even be elected to this job again, I would be thrilled.
Council members, good to talk to you. Thank you for the time.
Thank you so much. Appreciate your time.